Välkomna till Italienpodden. I det här avsnittet så träffar vi Mark Di Grazia från gården Terre Nere på Etnas svarta sluttningar. Mark var en av de första som började göra vin på Etna i början på 2000-talet. Och Etna har ju gått igenom något av en vinrenässans sedan 30 år tillbaka. Det händer mycket på den sicilianska vulkanen just nu, och hör vad Mark har att säga om det här. Hoppas ni tycker om det. Vi hörs snart. Ciao, ciao! So hello everyone from Etna on Sicily. Today there's a great emotion to be with Marco Di Grazia, a myth in Italian wine. So welcome to Italian Podden.
Ciao, grazie, grazie.
So Marco, could you please tell us how you ended up on Etna?
As many things, it was a question of chance. I was invited here by an estate to taste the wines and to help them with the distribution. So I came down and I came and tasted, and then I rented a car and went around the Etna and tasting wines of, you know, little vignerons that didn't even bottle. And at the time I was very involved in bringing great small producers to improve their wines and the potential. And so I found the wines that I tasted here, I liked very much. And I thought that I could produce something that I really would enjoy. So, I came from Tuscany. It's not that we don't have beautiful vineyards there, but this type of wine, because of its nature, that it resembled the wines of, in my opinion, the wines of Piemonte and the wines of Burgundy, had a special fascination for me. That's why.
And which year was it?
It was either 1999 or 2000.
And how many, Benanti was already active, and Cornelissen was not active. No. Who?
In fact,
who?
it was Benanti who called me here.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And could you tell us a little bit, just to step back a little bit, about your personal history? Because you worked as a wine importer in the States. But
no, I was never a wine importer. I was a wine exporter from Italy.
Yes.
So, and not only to the United States, but all over the world. Now, and so I started in 1980, and 7 years ago, Terre Nere was growing, and it was a bit difficult for me to do both things. And so I left my distribution company and consulting company to my brother, and devoted myself to Terre Nere. In between, I also had an adventure with some friends. We created an estate in Argentina, which is still going very, very well. But again, I couldn't do everything. So after 7 or 8 years, I sold my part to my partners and devoted myself to Etna. So.
And what is so particular with Etna? If someone of our listeners have just heard about Etna, maybe they know that she is a volcano on Sicily, but why is this territory so particular?
Well, volcanoes all over the world are special. Even if you go to tropical weather, they will plant coffee or tea or sometimes rice fields. And the products that they deliver are always very, very fine. So here it's not only grapes, but the olive oil is wonderful, the vegetables are wonderful, all the fruits are very delicate, just like the wine is. Moreover, it is like an island inside of an island. It's unique because of the altitude of the vineyards and of the quality and the delicate nature, the very fine nature of the wines, the very perfumed nature of the wines, and the diversity of all the soils and microclimates, places it, as I mentioned before, in the categories or to be like a sibling to Burgundy. And it's different. you know, types of wines, beautiful variety, always with the same grapes. So this is very similar. And also in Burgundy, they have very fine whites. As we have beginning to really explore, the whites here are extremely interesting as well. So the closeness of these two areas is remarkable. And, you know, I, like many people, are guided by taste. Some people prefer Burgundy. Some people prefer Bordeaux. I'm a Burgundy person. And so the Etna was, for me, and in fact, on my first back label that I wrote in 2002, I associated the Etna. I said the Etna is like the Burgundy of the Mediterranean. And still today, I believe it. And it makes perfect sense.
And Etna is 3,350 meters high. And how can you tell us a little bit about your vineyards and the soils and the grapes from Terre Nere?
Well, another characteristic that makes it similar to Barolo and Burgundy is that here the parcels are very small. So we have roughly 42 hectares in our property, but they're in 37 parcels. So we go a bit crazy with all this. The soils are very different. Sometimes in the same parcel, we find different soils. And certainly our vineyards go from roughly 600 meters to roughly 950 meters in altitude. So the climatic variation is huge. And then the soils are a combination of volcanic ash, volcanic sand, and different volcanic rocks. So it could be basaltic rocks or rocks of another volcanic nature. But for instance, here we don't have tufo, which is another volcanic rock, and we don't have obsidian, which they do have, for instance, in the Aeolian Islands. So every volcano also has its different soils. So and but the combination of the different soils, the different altitudes, and the different climates, which are radically different from one area of the Appalachian to another, makes for an infinite variety of possibilities and challenges.
And the grapes, the Nerello Mascalese, that sometimes gets a little help from Nerello Cappuccio, that has a lower acidity and a little bit more color, and the white Caricante. How do you see them? What are them to you?
Well, Nerello Mascalese is the master grape. There's no question about it. Nerello Cappuccio is, again, as you mentioned, It is to Nerello Mascalese, much like Merlot is to Cabernet. It softens the wines. It has softer tannins, more color, and it allows. There are areas on the Etna which deliver wines that are more tannic than other areas, and so the Nerello Cappuccio is very beneficial to those areas. For instance, on the north side, there's an area like Moganazio, an area like Sotrinoto, which yields quite, you know, like much like Pomar or Nuit Saint-Georges, very tannic wines, or relatively tannic wines. Personally, I like tannic wines. But you know, in these areas, you'll find normally, with old vines planted by farmers, you'll find a larger percentage of Nerello Cappuccio and also a percentage of white grapes as well. Yes.
And the Caricante, the white grapes and the white wines are increasing and they are improving. When it comes to potential, where are we right now with the white wines on Etna?
Well, the white wines on Etna have a very brief history of winemaking. They were planted hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but they were never dealt with, let's say, scientifically with modern or contemporary winemaking until very recently. So, and they have been planted not very many years ago. Therefore, and they have given already very, very interesting results. So my feeling is that whereas with the reds, we have understood quite a bit and we can still continue improving. With the whites, we have more space for improvement because we have less experience. We have less experiences where the best places to plant them are. For instance, the north side has just been planted recently. My first vintage with my first grapes in on the north side was 2014, whereas the red was 2002. So I have 12 more years experience with the reds. And so there's space to learn. My feeling is that Caricante, like Nerello Mascalese, is a very susceptible to change with the climate and also soils and the experience that I have from our vineyards and from bought grapes as well. So I think we will see in the next 5-10 years to a growth in quality for the young vines that are being planted and a growth in understanding that we don't have yet.
And we had a masterclass this morning and you gave this beautiful introduction to Etna from a book. And we also talked, there was a question in the masterclass about ungrafted wines, because Etna is one of the few places where you have ungrafted wines. Do you think there is a difference between grafted and ungrafted wines or?
Vines.
Yes.
Vines.
Yes. Is there a difference?
Because you have both, right, on your...
Yes, I have both, and I have both in the same vineyard.
Okay.
So, in fact, since 2006, I vinified them and bottled them separately, and there is a difference. There's no question. And
what kind of difference?
But wait.
Okay.
Because we have a difference there. One's... they're not only ungrafted, they are pre-phylloxera, right? So that means they're 140, 150 years old, okay? And the ones next to them with the same varietal are 60, 70 years old. So how much of the difference is due to the age of the vines and how much is due to the fact that some are ungrafted and some aren't is very difficult to assess. So the difference is there. There's no question about it. I would have to have ungrafted vines of the same age to be able to really, have a scientific report to deliver. Because in the same vineyard, we have young vines, and they're, of course, a lot different as well.
Sure.
And what do you think is the biggest challenge for the next 10 years for Etna as a wine region?
I think the biggest challenge, I'll tell you what happened in the last 10 years. In the last 10 years, Etna passed from around 30 estates to 171 estates. Most of these are very small with very little experience, both of the Etna and of winemaking. Okay. I think, if I'm not mistaken, out of 171 estates, 100 of them don't own a cellar. So they have somebody else vinify their wine in somebody else's cellar. So the control over the vinification is non-existent by the owner, and often he also has vineyard people conducting the vineyard work, and therefore, what I hope will happen in the next 10 years is that many of these small estates will be able to build their own facilities, their own cellars, and will produce wines that are less of an improvisation, less of a hobby, and more of a professional attitude.
Yeah, because that's kind of a concept of terroir, right? Where the humans are highly involved in the production of a terroir-driven wine.
Exactly. I mean, the human being has a huge responsibility, a cultural responsibility, a responsibility, as I mentioned this morning, to produce the finest wines possible. And in order to do that, he has to use all the all the ammunition, let's say, that he can possibly use, which is science, which is information of all kinds, intuition, imagination, an excellent cellar, everything. And maybe most important of all, he has to have or develop a vision, a direction. Because if you believe that you leave everything to nature, and it's like sailing without without a compass. You don't have a direction, and you'll end up nowhere. You really have to. The process of winemaking has to be guided. Look, to give you an idea, Einstein said that he always knew relativity, but he spent all of his life proving it. Okay? So it's the same thing for any mathematical or arithmetic problem. There's an infinite amount of wrong answers and only one correct one. So if you want to find that correct one, you have to at least have a good idea of where it is in the middle of the infinite incorrect ones. And then little by little, you'll get it. You'll get that answer. So you have to have that direction. You have to have that. And then if you do have that, you know, you equip your sellers to go into that direction, to navigate there. And then if you are in search of some kind of beauty, you'll find it.
That's beautiful. And another thing that I have been thinking of is there a risk, because I've been reading a lot about the difference between a fine wine and a luxury
wine?
Yes. Do you think there's a risk that Etna turns into luxury and not a fine wine? Because it has been a very fast development of the region. Prices are going up. And is there a risk that the bubble burst?
Well, the prices have been going up. But personally, speaking for my wines that have, they have not been going up very gradually. But it's true, some wineries have come out with their first wines already very expensive. And I don't really agree much with that, but it's part of, you know, of following the fashion of luxury wines, right? They want to, you know, many luxury wines are simply very, very expensive. And so the people that drink them eventually are very few. And most of them probably don't know much about wine, but they feel that if it's so expensive, it has to be good, which is not true. So I think in some cases, the Etna, like any other appellation of where the potential is high, we'll find some so-called luxury-directed wines. But in the end, I'm not interested. So I don't really care. I don't think the bubble will burst if there is a relatively high percentage of fine winemaking, which is what I hope will happen in the next 10 years, as I mentioned before. If that is true, if that does happen, that then the Etna will be protected from this bubble burst effect. now what I see is that there are, you know, a dozen or 20 estates that have become quite well known internationally. You know, we hope that this will increase.
Yeah, to kind of set the standard for the rest.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
And last question, what do you miss about Etna when you go away from here, when you leave Etna, what do you miss about her?
You know, I miss more than anything else the viticulture. In other words, I'm much more fascinated today with the viticulture, and I don't miss my cellar that much, but I miss walking in the vineyards, and but I also, there's something that I'm, for instance, last night and this morning early, I devoted myself to thinking about this harvest that's upcoming. And so sometimes I miss the tension of the change of what I want to do this year that I haven't done the year before, that I know will give me the chance of improving maybe 5% or 3%. And, I miss that the intensity of life when the harvest is there. That's for sure.
Huh. Yeah, that's the problem with winemaking, right? You just get one chance per year.
Yes, that's true. But I think, you see, winemaking or estates used to be dynastic. You know, you did what your father did, and the father did what the grandfather did. And the accumulation of experience and knowledge was fundamental. And there's a wisdom there. And the patience that you develop, and a serenity in outlook, which is very difficult to achieve in one lifetime. And so I'm very nervous.
Okay, that's the end of this podcast. Marco is very nervous. Well, good luck with the harvest and everything, and thank you for taking your time today.
Thank you.
Ta-da.